Judges 3, verses 1 through 14. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. And Moses said, I will turn aside to see this great sight, why the bush is not burned. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. And he said, I am the Lord, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmakers. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, and the Perizzites, the Hittites and the Jebusites. And now behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? He said, But I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. Then Moses said to God, If I come to the people of Israel and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, What is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, Say to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you.
Hey, good morning. As Bryce and Mayo mentioned, my name is Landon Dermott, and if we haven't met before, I have the pleasure of serving as the area director of a ministry called Roanoke here, a ministry called Young Life here in Roanoke, and it's such a gift to serve in that role. I really believe that I have my dream job, and if you didn't know, the mission of Young Life is to introduce adolescents to Jesus Christ and to help them grow in their faith. That's our mission, and so what we do is we build teams. We have staff and volunteers, some of which are in this room, and we go and we show up in the world of teenagers, and we do what we call earning the right to be heard. We build friendships and relationships with middle school and high school students in hopes of building a bridge of friendship that we would then cross as we tell them about Jesus. And Jim Rayburn, the guy who founded the Mission of Young Life in the 40s, said this of Young Life. He said, the big dream of Young Life was just a little dream that got big because there was such a big idea behind it. One that we never thought of, that every kid has a right to know the truth about Jesus Christ. They have a right to know who he is, they have a right to know how they relate to that, and they have a right to know him personally. And he said this in the 70s, he said, man alive, if there was ever a generation that needed to hear that. And what I would say is, I wish he could have seen 2025, because man alive, if there was ever a generation that needed to hear the truth about Jesus Christ, it was today's generation. And so that's what we do. And so I'm really thankful to get to be here this Sunday as you guys and your church is having a missions emphasis over the last few weeks. And I'm really grateful for Bryce. And if you didn't know this, which you do, but I get the pleasure of saying this as a visitor today, this church is so fortunate to have Bryce leading it. And just even being here this morning and watching him and the way he leads so humbly and so boldly, it really is a gift. And so I'm thankful for Bryce, and he mentioned this, but my wife's name is Caroline, and we were sitting on the couch yesterday, and we were just having a conversation, and I recalled that I took on the role of being the area director of Young Life in Roanoke 5 years ago, and I remember one of the first things that I saw about the ministry of Young Life here in the Roanoke Valley was we did a really good job of reaching kids in the southern part of Roanoke County. And I thought, man, I want to reach every kid for the sake of the gospel. And one of the places we really want to grow and develop is in Roanoke City. And I had met a guy named Lemurier Mayo who had some really incredible gifts and who had a passion to see kids in Roanoke City know about Jesus. And I wanted Mayo to join our team and join Young Life staff. And he was, at the time, working with Roanoke City and kind of some other job and also working here as the youth director. And Mayo and I started having some conversations. And then we began talking with Tom Oster about what it would look like to build a partnership between Christ our Redeemer and Young Life and see Mayo continue to reach students here at CORE, but also to start developing the ministry of Young Life in Roanoke City. And if you had told me 5 years ago when we had just started those conversations that we would be here today, I wouldn't have believed you. I would have thought, I hope it happens and I'm praying that that will happen. But because of the yes of Maya and this church and Tom and now Bryce and the partnership that we have, there are so many kids in Roanoke City being reached for the sake of the gospel. We have Young Life established at Patrick Henry and at Woodrow Wilson, James Madison, Breckenridge, and Addison. And Mayo is pioneering some new stuff. And we're already praying about how we can build a ministry over at William Fleming High School. And so just to be here today, I was telling Caroline, I was like, if you had told me 5 years ago that I would be preaching at CORE on a Sunday and we would have the partnership we have and the way it's impacting so many people, I don't think I would have believed you. But here we are, and the Lord is good. And so I just want you to know that I'm really thankful for you as well and your partnership. As someone who was changed by the ministry of Young Life, I wouldn't have been impacted if it hadn't been for adults like you who believe in the mission of Young Life and allow us to go and do what we do. So thank you. It's a gift to be here this morning. And we're going to look at Exodus chapter 3. Keisha, that was a long read, so thanks for taking that on for us. But if you've got your Bible, you can flip it open to Exodus chapter 3. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 14. And some of you in this room are maybe some of the advanced students, so to speak, and you've heard this passage before. And we're going to talk about Moses and the call that God places on his life here in Exodus chapter 3. And as we do so this morning, I'd love to walk through what I would say are three phases that we see Moses kind of process through as he hears God's call for his life. And as we do that this morning, my question to you would be, where do you feel like you stand in these three phases? Because I would venture to say everyone in this room probably falls into one of the three phases that Moses is in this passage 1 through 14 as he hears God's call in his life. But before we jump in verse 1, I know some of you know the story, but I just want to give a quick recap of Moses and his life up into this point. And it's just in the chapters before, in chapter 1 and chapter 2. But Moses' life was broken into three 40-year chunks. It makes it really helpful and easy to remember. But when Moses was born, he was born in Egypt as an Israelite. And at the time, the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, and they were the Egyptians saw the Israelites were growing and in prominence and power, and so they were a little concerned about it. And when Moses was born, they had tried to put every firstborn to death. So Moses was born into a world that wanted him to be killed, and so his mom puts him in this basket and puts him down the Nile River, and he floats. And then in this miraculous, crazy turn of events, you should read it if you haven't, Moses is rescued, and then he's raised in the Pharaoh's house. The king of Egypt raises him, and he ends up even being able to be cared for by his own mom. And so he's raised in the palace in Egypt, all the while his own people, the Israelites, are enslaved right outside the door. So you can imagine what it would have been like for 40 years to grow up in Egyptian culture, to be raised in a prominent family, to be learning the Egyptian culture, learning the Egyptian language, and all the while peering out the window and seeing your own people enslaved by an oppressive people. Must have created an identity crisis. He must have tossed and turned at night wondering why he was in the palace and his people were outside in slavery. The Bible says that Moses had a heart of justice, and I wonder if he longed to see his own people set free, and he wondered if maybe he had a role to play in that. And that was 40 years in the palace that Moses is raised in Egyptian culture. And then that all comes to a head at about 40 years when Moses sees his people being oppressed and his heart of justice bubbles over to the surface and he becomes angry and he sees an Egyptian oppressing one of his own people and he becomes enraged. And it says that he goes and he tries to do something about it and he ends up committing murder. And he ends up doing something that he would never have dreamed of doing. And he immediately feels the remorse as his heart for justice turns dark. And he tries to bury that person in the sand. And it says he leaves. And then the next day he comes back and he sees two of his own people arguing. And his heart for justice, he says, hey, don't quarrel. Like he tries to resolve this argument. And it says the two men look at him and they say, who are you to be ruler and judge among us? Are you going to do to us what you did to that man the other day? And we'll come back to that in a little bit. But what I want you to see about that is Moses in that moment saw that what he had done, his own sin and his own brokenness that bubbled up to the surface had now been found out. And it was going to get to the Pharaoh and he was going to be like on the FBI most wanted list. And he knew he had to get the heck out of Dodge. And so Moses, 40 years in Egypt, now changes and he flees to the wilderness. And Moses goes to the wilderness and there he meets a man named Jethro. Who's a priest, and he has a flock, and Moses ends up marrying Jethro's daughter, and he becomes a shepherd of this flock of sheep. And for 40 years, Moses was content to have left his people and left his place in Egypt and just be a simple shepherd in the wilderness, tending to this flock of sheep and raising his family. You could almost contend that what Moses did was he left this place of prominence in the big city and he moved into the suburbs and he began to live a sleepy life in the suburbs. And for 40 years, he tends to the flock of Jethro in the wilderness. And that's where we pick up the story now, on the cusp of him ending his second 40-year chunk and moving in to this third chunk of what God is calling him to do. And we see Moses meet God in his sleepy life in the suburbs as he's tending to Jethro's flock. And we're going to see God's call on his life. And as we look at it this morning, I would ask you, where do you see yourself in the story of Moses? And so we'll pick it up in verse 1. And so we're looking in Exodus chapter 3, verse 1, and it says this, "Now Moses was tending to the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And there the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. And Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. And so Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up." And so the first thing I want us to see as Moses kind of phases through his response to God's call in his life is the first thing is this: Moses is oblivious to God's call in his life. You see, Moses had lived for 40 years in the Egyptian culture and language and all those things, but now he's 80 years old. He's living in a wilderness. He is tending to sheep. And at this point in his life, we can imagine that Moses was surely thinking that if God had any plan for his life, anything that he wanted him to do, he left that when he fled from Egypt in those circumstances. And he thought, surely God is done with me. I'm just left to live a sleepy life in the suburbs and keep tending to the sheep. But then one day, he's walking, and he sees something peculiar out of the corner of his eye. And what I want you to know is this. Scholars would say that for someone who would tend to a flock in a desert wilderness, brush fires, fires that would come up in a desert, would have been actually pretty common. It would have been normal for Moses to have seen a bush on fire. But what was unique about this is that Moses notices that though the bush is burning, it is not consumed. And so Moses, walking in the desert, in the mountain he's walked many, many times, turns aside to look. And there's significance here as Moses turns aside to look and he says, I will look at this strange sight. The bush is on fire, but it is not consumed. I wonder if there's burning bushes in our lives. If there are things that are happening that on the surface might seem ordinary, but if you took a closer look, if you examined what was going on under the surface, that it was actually incredibly unique. And it was the Lord trying to get your attention. And because Moses turns aside to look and he sees this bush, it says, because he turns aside to look, God speaks to him. And so we pick it up in verse 4 and it says, when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses says, here I am. And Moses is beginning to have this conversation with God, and God says, hey, take your shoes off because this is holy ground. And I wonder if Moses was like, well, actually, I've been walking this mountain many, many times, and it's just a desert wilderness that I hang out with sheep in. But God says, no, I'm here, and therefore this is holy ground, so take your shoes off. And he does, and they begin to have this conversation, and God says, I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And he says, I'm here, and I want to have this conversation with you. And so Moses starts off and he's oblivious that God would use him, and he begins to have this conversation with God. And we can imagine that Moses would say, I'm just an 80-year-old living a sleepy life in the suburbs. Surely God would have no plan and no purpose for me. But they continue to have this conversation. We'll pick it up again in verse 7, and it says this, the Lord says, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. And I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I've come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. So the first thing we see is that Moses is oblivious to God's call in his life. But before we go to what I would contend is the second phase of Moses as he's experiencing God's call, is I just want to say this as we read verse 7. I think that in this room, there's likely some people that this morning woke up and it was all you could do to get out of bed, get in the car, drive here, and plop into a seat on this Sunday morning. There's brokenness or pain in your life that you're experiencing, and you would cry out to God and say, God, have you heard the things that I'm dealing with? God, don't you see the pain that I'm facing right now? Don't you understand the things that are going on in my world? And I think there are some of you that need to hear the truth about God, that the nature of God that was true here is true of God today. And he says, I have indeed seen the misery of my people, and I have heard them crying out, and I am concerned about their suffering, so I have come down to rescue them. And I hope you know that what was true about God is true about him now, and he sees you, and he hears you, and he knows you, and he's concerned about you, and he does something about it. And so the story goes on, and he says, I'm going to take them to the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. Didn't think I could hit those, but there I did. Okay, and then it says, and now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I've seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them, so now go. And I wonder if Moses is having this conversation with his God, and he's barefoot, and he's talking to him, and it's this crazy moment, and he's saying, I've heard the cry of my people, and I'm going to deliver them, and I'm going to take them to a good land. And if Moses is like, oh yeah, keep it coming, let's go, this is awesome. And then God says, so now go. And if Moses said, hold the phone. Me? Me? You want me to go and be the one who's going to march into Egypt and free our people from slavery? Me? And I think what we see happen right here is Moses moves from oblivious to God's call in his life to fearful. How is an 80-year-old shepherd who, by the way, left Egypt on some pretty severe circumstances, right? He had gotten mixed up in the law. Some bad things had happened. He had disqualified himself. And now he looks and he says, how could I be the one to go and do this? And it's not an easy job, right? This is dangerous, and it could lead ultimately to his own death. And he says, and you want me to do this? And Moses becomes fearful. There are three things I want us to see as he's fearful, but what we see is the way he responds is in verse 11, Moses says to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And the first thing that I want us to see that scholars would say about this that's interesting about what Moses says here is as he says, who am I? What people would say is it's likely that Moses is rephrasing the question that was asked of him just a chapter earlier. So I told you he gets mixed up. He gets into trouble. He ends up doing something terrible. And then the next day he goes and he sees two Israelites quarreling and he tries to resolve it. He wants to see his people united and freed. And what do they say to him? They say, who are you to be a ruler and judge among us? Are you going to do to us what you did to that man the other day? Moses is rephrasing to God the question that those men asked of him 40 years later. Why? Because I think that as Moses spent time alone and in the quiet, he remembered those words. I think every time he heard those men asking him, who are you to be ruler and judge among us? He winced in pain and he was reminded of his shame and his guilt. I wonder if he woke up in the middle of the night and he tossed and turned about the things he had done and the things that had been said about him. I wonder if you when you're driving alone, or wake up in the middle of the night, are reminded of some of the things you've done in your past, or some of the things that the world has had to say about you, and you would say to God, if he were to ever call you to something, who am I? Don't you know who I was in high school? Don't you know who I was last week? Don't you know the things I've said? Don't you know the thing that the world says about me? Who am I? Who am I? And Moses is looking and he's saying, I have gone too far. And we'll come back to this, but I hope you know this, that there's more grace in the Lord than there is sin in you. And God is calling, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. But Moses looks at God and he says, who am I? I am inadequate because of who I am, because of the things I've done. And I wonder if you ever look in the mirror in the morning and know who you are compared to the things that God has called you to do, and you would say, who am I? I want to say this next is, I look at this story and I've studied a little bit of Exodus and what happened before this and what happens after this. And if I were God, which I am not, and I am far from that, if it were me, I would look at Moses as he asks, who am I? And I would say, Moses, don't you see? And I'd be like, this is obvious. Like, this is an unbelievable way that we see that God has uniquely crafted Moses to be the one who will free the Israelites from the oppression of the Egyptians. If we look at the story, we see that Moses was raised in the house of Pharaoh. He understands Egyptian culture. He understands Egyptian language. He understands the inner workings of the power and authority structure. He knows what's going on in Egypt. He is an Israelite. He has a heart for justice, and he desires to see his people set free. Oh, and he's going to go and free them from Egypt and take them into the wilderness for a long time, and he's going to be their shepherd. He's going to lead the flock, just like he learned how to shepherd sheep for the last 40 years in Midian. And all of these things point to Moses being uniquely crafted by God for this role. And if I were God, I'd be like, don't you see? I made you for this. You were made for such a time as this to do what I've called you to do. But God doesn't say that. God doesn't say, Moses, let me tell you why I've created this resume for you that you're going to be great at and why you're going to be good at doing these things. He doesn't say that. Instead, what does he say? Moses says to God, God says, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. God doesn't say, here's why you're qualified, or here's the prereqs that you needed that you found. He says, I am going with you. Because when God calls us, all that we need is to know that God has called us and that he is going with us. And God promises his presence over everything else. And when God calls us to do something, we're not being judged for our success. Whether we go and do what he does and we build this incredible thing or do this amazing thing or it succeeds, that's not what he's judging us on. When God calls us to something, he calls us to be obedient. And he says, Moses, go, and I will go with you. In fact, if you kind of follow the story along, Moses and God continue to have this conversation for a while. And eventually, God even says to Moses, he says, Pharaoh will never let the people go unless I loosen the grip of his hand. Essentially what he says to Moses is, I'm calling you to an impossible task. Even though you understand Egyptian culture, even though you know how to be a shepherd, this task is impossible for you unless I do the work. And that's the mystery of what God has called all of his people, including me and you, to do, is he's called us to do something impossible, but he is going with us and he is going to do the work, and he's called us to be faithful and obedient in that. And so God says to Moses, I will be with you. And then the conversation continues, and it says that God says to Moses in verse 14, or well, I'll pick it up in 13. Moses says, okay, fine, if I go with you, then who do I tell the people that has sent me? How do I tell people who you are and what they know about you and all these things? And God says to Moses in verse 14, one of perhaps the most significant statements in all of the Old Testament, and we don't have the time this morning to unpack it. We could probably spend the next hour here together unpacking the theological and spiritual importance of this statement of what God says here, but Bryce will circle back to that another time and cover some of those things. But here's what God says. He says, I am who I am. And this is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. There's so much to unpack in that statement, but what God is looking at Moses is saying is, I want you to go and free my people from the oppression of the Egyptians. And you are going to do it. And he says, guess what? I am the God who made the world, and I'm the God who made you. He says, I'm the God who is incredibly powerful, and I'm the God who's incredibly personal. He says, I'm the God who is ultimate, and I'm the God who is intimate. And before you were, I am. I was, I am, and I am to come. He is before all things. He's in all things, and through him, all things are held together. And God reveals himself for being powerful and personal to Moses. And he says, Moses, I am who I am, and so now go. And then Moses does it. Just kidding. Because they continue to have this conversation, and Moses is like, yeah, yeah, but what about this? And what about this? And Moses continues to be fearful of what God has called him to do. And the passage goes on for a long time, and even into chapter 4, and God's like, put your hand in your pocket and pulls it, and this amazing thing happens, and you think then he would go and all these things. But Moses continues to be fearful and afraid of what will happen when he goes. And ultimately, I love this. It gets to the end of the argument, and Moses runs out of ways he can say no to God. And eventually, he just says, God, I get it. Would you just please send somebody else? I wonder if you've ever heard what God has called you to do, and you get to the end of your rope, and you just say, God, would you please just send somebody else? But he doesn't. He's called Moses to do something unique in this moment in time. And I hope you hear this if you hear nothing else. God has called you in this moment to do something that he's called nobody else to do. And eventually, Moses moves from being oblivious to God's call in his life to fearful to faithful. And eventually, Moses says yes. And he spends his 40 years in the palace, and then he spends 40 years in the wilderness, and then he turns and he marches back into Egypt, and he plays the role of being the deliverer, the rescuer of his people from the slavery of the Egyptians. And the story gets crazy, and they leave Egypt, and he gets to lead the Israelites out of Egypt, and they come to a Red Sea, and he puts his staff down, and he splits the sea wide open, and he leads the people through it. And then they go into the wilderness, and Moses continues to be this leader of his people. He's the shepherd of the flock in the wilderness. And then eventually he goes up on a mountain, and he receives a covenant that he mediates between God and the people, the law as we know it. And Moses is faithful and is an incredible leader in the Old Testament. And it's easy for us to hear this story and to think, oh, well, Moses is in the Hall of Fame. Moses is awesome, and I would never be Moses. But Moses was a broken human being who was at one point oblivious, who at one point had gotten tangled up in sin that made him feel like he was disqualified, that spent 40 years just living a sleepy life in the suburbs, tending to the flock. But God chose to use him. And Moses isn't the ultimate. And I would be remiss if this morning we didn't look at how Moses actually really points us to Jesus. Because Jesus is to come, and he's to be the true and better Moses. And Jesus spent eternity up in the palace in heaven with God. And then he left the palace, not under bad circumstances, but under good circumstances. And then he comes to earth, and he lives in the wilderness for 40 days, not 40 years, before resolutely turning his face towards Jerusalem and marching there to free his people from the slavery that they're being oppressed by. Not the slavery from the Egyptians, but slavery from sin of this world. And then he leads them out of their slavery. And when he comes to a sea, he doesn't need God to part it as he puts his staff down. What does he do? He walks on it. And then when the storm goes crazy, what does he do? He speaks to the sea and he commands what it will do. And Jesus isn't just a shepherd out in the wilderness. He is the good shepherd. And then Jesus goes up on a mountainside like Moses did, and he mediates a new covenant. He is the fulfillment of that covenant that Moses is a part of mediating. He fulfills it, and he mediates a new covenant. How? Because he is the perfect sacrifice. Jesus is the burning bush that we see in this, right? He turns aside and he sees this bush, and the bush is on fire, but it's not consumed. Jesus is the ultimate burning bush who goes up on a mountain and he dies on a cross, and the wrath of God that's for me and you is poured out on him, but instead of dying, he's not consumed. He's raised again. Jesus is the true and better Moses who is to come. But as we close this morning, I posed a question at the beginning, and what I would ask you is, where do you find yourself in the story? Because my guess is everyone in this room falls into one of the three camps. Perhaps you're oblivious of what God's call for your life would be today. Perhaps you know what God's call for your life is today and you're fearful of what it would look like to say yes to that. Or perhaps there's some folks in this room that are currently saying yes, that are faithful and have been faithful to what God's call is for your life. And as we wrap up, I'd love to offer just one thought for each of those groups of people. The first is this. Perhaps you're here this morning and you would say, I am faithful to God's call in my life. I've heard what he's asked me to do, and I have said yes to that. And what I would say is that is wonderful news. And what I would ask you to do is do the same thing tomorrow. Because it's not a once-in-a-lifetime thing to say yes to what God's called you to do. It's a daily thing. Would you wake up tomorrow morning and go further up and further in, as C.S. Lewis says, with intimacy with Christ? And would you continue to say yes? And when he's called you to go here, would you go there? And when he calls you to go here, would you go there? Follow him closely and continue to do so. The second thing, the second group of people in this room are people who have heard God's call for their life, and they feel fearful of what would happen if we say yes. Perhaps it's something incredibly big that God has called you to start a church or start a ministry or go and change the world or to adopt or do whatever, fill in the blank, and your palms are sweaty right now because you know that the Lord has called you to do that and you know he's closing in on you, and maybe you're like Moses and you say, Lord, just please send somebody else. And what I would say to you is, I think that we should be more afraid of what would happen if we don't say yes to God than if we do say yes to God. And I'm not saying that because God's going to strike us down from heaven and he's going to get mad at us and we live in this fear-based culture. I don't think that's true. But what I would say is this. I think we should be more afraid of what would happen if we don't say yes than if we do. Imagine what Moses would have missed if he had said no. Imagine all the incredible things that he got to do and see. And more so than that, do you know Moses is someone who got to see God more than anyone else? And so when we don't say yes to God's call for our life, what we miss is intimacy with him himself. Imagine if Peter had said no when Jesus said, hey, come and follow me, leave the nets. All of the things he would have missed. Sure, it would have been safer. Sure, it would have been easier. But I bet Peter would have traded all those days that would have been spent on a boat to be that close to Jesus. And so what I would say to you is if you're sitting here fearful today, know this. One, the Lord has called you not to be successful, but to be obedient. I think we should consider more what we would miss if we say no to what God has called us to do than what would happen to us if we say yes. And the third group of people are people that are here this morning that might feel oblivious to God's call in their life. I would contend this is probably the largest group of us, that we're like Moses, living a simple life in the suburbs, doing what we do. And we say, I've never really heard God speak audibly to me, or I don't really know how I would know what God has called me to do. And if you wanted to use people, surely it would be someone other than me, because who am I? We're people that would say, God doesn't want to use me. And what I would say to you is what we see of Moses in this encounter with God in the wilderness is what happens. He's doing what he's always done, and out of the corner of his eye, he sees a bush that is on fire, but though it's burning, it's not consumed. Something that's incredibly ordinary, but under the surface is actually peculiar, and what is it? It's God trying to get his attention. I wonder if, as we see Moses doing, living at a pace and living in a place where he can be attentive to what God is trying to say to him, he then turns aside and encounters God. I wonder if it's all too easy for us in our culture to not move at a pace or in a place where we would be able to turn aside and look and see what God has called us to do. And my question to you would be, are you living in a pace and in a place where you could turn aside and look and see what God might be trying to say to you, and things that on the surface seem ordinary, but underneath the surface are extraordinary? Because it's when Moses turns aside to look that it says God begins to speak, and he says, Moses, Moses. And so if you're here and you would say you feel oblivious or why would God use you, what I would say is there is no small call in the kingdom of God. And God has something to say to you, and he has something for you to do, and he wants to know you, if only you would turn aside to look. I'm going to pray in just a second, and there will be another worship song. And what I would hope for you this morning is that you would consider what the Lord is calling you to do. And whether you're oblivious or fearful or faithful, that you would lean in to what God might be saying to you and what he might be calling you to do. As you've had a missions emphasis past few weeks, there's been different ways that you could get involved with ministry, that you could do incredible things, like I said, or maybe it's just that tomorrow you show up at the office and that person who you've sat next to every single day, you strike up a conversation with in hopes of telling them about Jesus. Or you mend a relationship that's been broken for years and years. But I hope that you would consider what the Lord is calling you to do. Let me pray. Lord, thank you for this morning. Thanks for this church and the way that they faithfully serve you and are obedient to what you have called them to do. Lord, I pray that there would be folks in this room that would consider what you are doing in their lives. That there'd be people that would say yes to what you've called them to do. That there'd be people that would turn aside and look and examine the things in their life and see the places that you are calling to them and want to speak to them. Thanks for this morning and the way that you love us. In your name we pray. Amen.